Hey there, this is Jenny Chen. I'm the founder of 3D Heels. Welcome to the Lattice podcast, the official podcast for 3D Heels. This is where you will find fun but in-depth conversations with technological game changers, creative minds, entrepreneurs, rule breakers, and more, focusing on how we can use 3D technologies like 3D printing and bioprinting to reinvent healthcare and even life sciences. This podcast will also include AMA, or Ask Me Anything sessions, past Instagram live interviews with influencers, and other direct engagements with our tribe. Oh, welcome to our episode today, Mike. Thanks for joining us. I want to give a little bit introduction about who you are. You had a pretty strong engineering background. You have been a biomedical engineer earlier in your career, and then you went to business school, one of the best business schools. And then you worked in the medical device industry for, I would say, decades, right? For many years.
Yeah, over 20 now, yeah.
And then it's almost like fairy tale. You found your college friend, Adam Feinberg, and then you co-founded Fluidform. You know, it's actually a very interesting story in itself. Why don't you share with us how that got started?
Sure. Happy to. You know, it's funny when I think about it, because it was almost 25 years ago that I first met Adam. He and I were co-op engineers at a medical device company and working in R&D on, you know, innovative new, in that case, cardiac devices. And we, you know, I think at the same time, we both sort of got intrigued by some of what was going on in the field of tissue engineering. I can remember reading those early papers, you know, the Conti lab, Langer lab, working on some really interesting work. This was in the days when, you know, we had no idea what tissue engineering could be, but I think it was on the cover of Newsweek. You know, we're all going to have 3D print or tissue engineered organs in the next 5 years. I knew that for me, industry was the way to go. So I spent most of the last 20 years in industry, in medical devices and combination drug device products, and launched 4 different PMA and BLA approval products. And I got really fascinated with how do we bring products to market and how do we decide what the right product and the best products are to help people. And in parallel, Adam was, you know, a terrific researcher and went off and did his PhD and then the postdoc at Harvard, and has been, you know, at Carnegie Mellon for over a decade now, focused on these central problems of how do we do tissue engineering the way that the body does, not just sort of whatever we can make up. So it's been really intriguing to watch that research process come to fruition. You know, their labs published some great papers over the years. And while I've been mostly a business person for the last, you know, 15 years, I still love reading the literature. I still love reading papers, clinical and research. And so when I had reached out in end of 2017, beginning of 2018, as to what was going on with their research and whether, you know, there was any opportunity there, you know, Adam had a few other folks and, you know, his graduate students in his lab who were working on putting together a business plan. And so he said, you know, would you come out and take a look? You know, maybe you might see something that we're not. And it was just a really good fit. It was a tremendous group of people. The folks in the Feinberg lab at Carnegie Mellon are some of the best in the world. And it was a real privilege to work with them on the thoughts they were having and start to try to ask some questions and shape things. So, you know, we had a lot of fun kicking some ideas around and ultimately decided to put a company together amongst the five of us. So I've been really fortunate to work with some world-class colleagues in putting the business together. And I can say, you know, the ability to work with people that you can rapidly build a relationship or either have a relationship with or rapidly build a relationship with because of that, it's been, you know, it's been a real privilege. It's really exciting. It's really a great group, and it's just an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I can imagine sitting around with brilliant people talking about creative ideas. I mean, that in itself is a joy. But founding a company, especially a company focusing on bioprinting, you know, somewhat of a, I guess, a very unknown path. It's ambitious and it's kind of scary, I would say. How did you guys decide that you're going to do this something that never, you know, there's no really, I would say, well-established prior business models, and the technology itself is super new. How did you guys like jump into entrepreneurship? What's the deciding moment?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question. I think the answer is probably different for each of the members of the founding team for Fluidform. And the answer is probably different for, you know, every entrepreneur who does it, right? Because there's something that makes you realize it. I knew that I wanted to be back into entrepreneurship. I'd spent 6 years in startups prior to my role before Fluidform, where I led business development for a mid-cap medtech company called Insulet. And I loved startups. I love the dynamicism of it. I love the ability to sort of actually think and change and make decisions in real time as you get really better information. I'm a strategy person by my nature. That's the part of it that I love and relate to the best. So, you know, in startups, there's always strategy questions. So I knew I wanted to be in that kind of space. And for me, the question was, well, if I want to be in a startup, what kind of startup do I want to be in? You know, at the end of the day, every startup's hard. There's always challenges. There's always difficulties. Nothing goes according to plan. So if I wanted to be in a startup, I wanted to be in a startup that had a chance to change the world.
Yeah.
And that to me was what attracted me to an opportunity like this.
You want to join a winning team.
Well, you know, it's really hard to pick winners in entrepreneurship. Yeah. So many things can go wrong, from market to technology to team to just external conditions. So betting on winners is a really hard game. That's why I feel like, you know, whatever you pick, you've got to be really passionate about it. And you've got to have a lot of belief that it can make a tremendous difference.
Yeah, Mike, I want to give the audience a little context of what your company does. I know that you have a motto or something that you can show people or what you do.
I do, yeah. So, you know, at its core, we are a company focused on advancing a 3D bioprinting technique called Fresh. That technique basically allows you to overcome what we think of as a lot of the limitations of the last 15 years or so in the field of applying 3D printing to biology. As some of the folks on the chat may be aware, 3D printing is really hard when your materials don't stand up on their own, when they're soft and when they deform and when they fall over, because then you can't really predict what you're actually going to print. So a lot of the 3D printing research in the last 15 years in the field of biology has been about how do we change biomaterials to make them more printable. At Fluidform, we think about the opposite question, right? How do we change how we print to work really well with the natural materials of the body? And so we've developed a technique, it's called Fresh, that allows you to 3D print inside of an environment where both you control how those materials stay where you want them and how they chemically are processed, so you can encourage biologic-like kind of cross-linking and other chemistry to be working. And so this is an example of this is alginate. It lasts a little bit longer than some of the biomaterials that work better for Intel. You can see some detail here where what you're looking at is about an inch and a half high. That makes it easier for me to carry around and show people. You can see some of the detail down to the LCA and the RCA and the LAD that are on there. That's about as much as you get out of an MRI. You can also see down and into the atrial appendage, and you can even see there's a little bit of valve inside there. This is an example of the sort of thing that, you know, unlike really small structures, you know, typically, you know, centimeter or two, that's what we often see at a bioprinting, and unlike structures that really don't have a lot of height, which is what we see out of bioprinting, because again, bioprinting in air is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. We are focused on bioprinting not in air, but in these environments that we create called Fresh. And that allows us to build at much, much larger scale. In fact, this, you know, inch and a half size heart is just, you know, a tiny example of the kind of sizes we've built. There was a paper published in November of a full-size adult human heart model.
Yes.
Out of alginate. But that was, you know, a full 6-8 inch size heart. And that's no different printing in Fresh than printing an inch and a half model.
Yeah, because, you know, in the air, you're working against gravity. But because of this gel suspension, actually Fresh stands for freeform reversible embedding of suspended gels. It's exactly what it is, the acronym. I was looking through reviewing what Fresh is, and there's a lot of chemistries involved. And so I'm sure there's like all kinds of different chemistries that you can play with to create this gel bed for different kind of structures you want to print or something like that.
That's absolutely right, Jenny. One of the things that people first see when they see Fresh is they say, oh, you know, the gravity thing, right? It overcomes the forces of gravity, so my materials that don't cure very, very rapidly can still be printed because the gel will hold it in place. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that takes a little bit longer to appreciate is that in addition to overcoming gravity, you're also printing into a controlled chemical environment. So for example, when we print collagen, which is a material we use a lot for a number of the pieces that we work on, when we print collagen, we print an acidified collagen directly into a neutralized bath. And as folks online who might work in the tissue engineering field know, when collagen goes through pH neutralization, it forms a certain kind of gelation that happens, right? So the collagen crosslinks and becomes a solid structure. And so we can use that behavior of collagen to cause our materials to gel under those conditions. We can control that gelation kinetics. We can actually make it do exactly what we want it to do. And that's just one of dozens and dozens of examples of the benefit of not just printing into an environment that overcomes gravity, but also an environment where you can control the chemistry around it.
Yes.
We print alginate, for example. We can print alginate into a bath that has calcium, and calcium will cause alginate to cross-link around it. And so that gives us the ability to print a number of materials that, frankly, there's really no other way to print effectively without going to things like UV light and otherwise. You know, UV light's a great tool. Don't get me wrong. But there's some really, really interesting research being done with it. But we believe that in the long run, you know, our goal is to make things that have the potential to translate for repair and replacement. And for repair and replacement inside the human body, we want to avoid anything that's, you know, foreign or non-native to the body, however possible. So we definitely want to be able to take advantage of these native properties of biomaterials that let us do all the things that we can do.
I mean, maybe you won't tell us, but I feel like you can have like 100 patents just out of trying to tinker different chemistries and different materials that you can create because of these just slight modifications of the technique. But, you know, one thing I really want to always enjoy talking to you, Mike, is because you have a very strong business background. And I think, you know, a lot of us are super fascinated with technologies and they're deservingly so. But commercialization is a huge challenge to a lot of scientists in the lab. I mean, even to me, you know, I'm not really from a business background. So How do you tackle this idea that now you've got this incredible technology? How do you find a market if it doesn't exist, or how do you expand it? How do you find the right product to focus on? Because you have so many ideas and, you know, potential areas.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, Jenny. And I think it's one of the real challenges in this space. I see a lot of people chasing a lot of different goals, and there's a lot of different directions any technology can go. You know, classically, there's the ability to say, listen, there's a gold rush coming, so I'm going to sell picks and shovels so that the people who are coming for the gold rush have the right tools. And there are a lot of tools companies. In fact, that's where the majority of the company names that we know in the bioprinting space are tools companies. I do believe that gold rush is coming, and I think tools companies have a chance to be successful. I think that the growth rate and how fast that gold rush comes is an open question. And I think that it'll be, you know, we'll find out over time how that works out. I also think that it's really important as a backdrop to remember that the idea of building technology that takes hundreds of millions of dollars to develop and a decade, there's a funding mechanism for that. Right? Biotech companies do it every single day. And so the reason why the biotech funding model works is because everybody understands, you know, if I identify the right opportunity, here's where the need is, mm-hmm. and I identify a technology that has a chance to solve that.
Yes.
And the pathway to get from here to there, at least I understand what the steps are. Then it's then we can build a series of tests with a, you know, large amount of money at each step along the way. So there's good funding mechanisms for that. The challenge, I think, for bioprinting in general is to develop the sophistication of its business model around, am I a really competent tools company, and therefore I can tell you when the gold rush is coming and what it's going to be worth, or am I developing real applications that make me look more like a biotech? And then do I have a credible story that I know what I'm going to do with my technology and I know how to get from here to there? I do find that you know, most early stage companies don't have a good handle on that. And that makes it really challenging for, you know, biotech companies to, you know, for companies that want to be biotech-like to pick an application and to do their, you know, direct all their work on that path. A lot of bioprinting technologies are kind of enamored with, well, we could do a lot of different things. And becoming enamored with we can do a lot of different things tends to lead people down the tools path, which is fine. But on the tools path, you've got to come up with your own assessment of, you know, when is that gold rush actually coming and how many people are going to need picks and shovels.
So who's Fluoform's current focus in terms of applications and customers, perhaps?
Sure. So, you know, we are very much an applications-oriented company. We do have a product available for researchers, and we believe that, you know, there's Fresh, I believe right now, is the largest bioprinting platform that's been cited in the literature anywhere.
Yes.
And so because of that, and that's largely on the backs of the paper published by my co-founder, Andrew Lee, and the rest of my co-founders in 2019 at Science, because of that, we want to enable researchers broadly to do research on this platform. We do think that there's, you know, no matter how much R&D we do internally, folks in the academic community will always be able to do more. So we have a product available, and that is something that we think of more as an opportunity to collaborate with academia than it is, you know, the business rationale for the existence of Fluidform. As a business, we're all about developing applications. And so we're really focused on taking steps that get us from here to there. I think one of the key questions for any business in this space is how do you, if you're applications oriented, how do you not build a, you know, 7-year, $500 million test that you only get an answer on 7 years from now? Because, you know, if you're building that and you have no idea if FDA will just say, yeah, there's no way, you know, no investor is going to sign themselves up for 7 years and $500 million. And nobody's going to develop an application for a lot less than that. So, you know, the core question is how do you mitigate the risk along the way? How do you demonstrate that you are actually making progress? How do you demonstrate that you are working with, you know, regulators around the world? How do you demonstrate that you can run clinical trials on things that have been made using your technology? And how do you do all that without focusing on something that's just not very interesting as a market?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of folks will say, well, we could do, you know, XYZ market. There's a lot of markets that you could apply bioprinting towards that aren't very attractive. So, you know, you can do things in certain bioprinting spaces where there's some money to be made, but not, you know, billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar markets to be chased after. And that doesn't help you either, right? So the core challenge, and this, I think, is the strategic challenge for any bioprinting technology, is how do you figure out where's that intersection of what we can do and what is the market that's really attractive with how do we demonstrate steps along the way?
Mm-hmm. And survive steps along the way, too.
Well, listen, I do believe very much down to my core that if you have a game-changing technology and you've got a really, really big addressable market and you've got reasonable steps to get from here to there to demonstrate, that there are investors out there who want to fund those. There's no question in my mind that there's a lot of money looking for technologies that can change the game. The core question is, have you been able to think through all of those steps? A lot of bioprinting technologies have one piece of those three, or maybe two, but very few people are able to piece together a coherent strategy that has all three.
Yeah. Well, just based on the Fresh technology itself, I was thinking that maybe the applications along the way that you're thinking is some kind of structure that's replacing a body component.
Yeah, you know, listen, we are, you know, we're really excited about a few programs that we have internally. We believe that because of our technology's ability to separate what's going on, we can build functional things that are acellular. We can build functional things that are cellular. It's our ability to structure collagen gives us that flexibility. So, you know, we believe that that actually opens up a lot of things that are more medical device-like, that we can actually start to build the clinical trial expertise, the FDA regulatory perspective, all independent of the risk of cellularized things, which we can build in parallel, but not on the implantable. And then the idea would be, you know, marry those two things up to be able to start to work on tissue for repair and replacement. So that's really been core to how we structure it. You know, we have two active programs right now. One that's an acellular implantable device-like program. Mm-hmm. The other one that's a cellularized non-implantable pharmatoxicity model.
I see.
By being able to work on both of those in parallel, we think it sort of de-risks the questions that are being asked in the space in a really intelligent way.
Yeah, I mean, pharma research seems to be a huge area of interest from all the bioprinting companies. How does Fresh stand apart from the other kind of bioprinting?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a really important topic when it comes to, you know, pharma is the classic fill-in, right? So, you know, we can bioprint for research, and then there's going to be tissue and organs, and what do we do in between? And the every slide I've seen for the last 3 years I've been doing this says, well, it's going to be pharma. The really important thing to recognize, I think, is that the 2D cell culture is good at a lot of things. And where 2D cell culture isn't good at, things like microfluidic models and organoid models and organ-on-chip models have been able to step in and make a difference. So if bioprinting is to bring value to the pharmaceutical discovery process, bioprinting needs to do one of two things. Either it needs to make the workflow on those other things better, being used as kind of a pick-and-place robot for precision droplet and all the rest of it. And there are folks doing that. Or it needs to be focused on making things that those other techniques can't make that give somebody in pharma additional insight that they otherwise can't get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I think is really important, right? It's not just, can I make a model of a piece of tissue? It's not, can I use my bioprinter to lump a bunch of organoids together? I mean, there's a great paper on Fresh on that last year, and Fresh can certainly do that. But where we focus is where does the physiology, the structure and the function and how they interact, where does that give information that you can't get any other way? And that's an area that we think, you know, there's a lot of unmet need in the pharma discovery process,
yeah,
both on the tox side as well as on the disease model side. So that's how we're thinking about it.
So we had a brief conversation yesterday to prepare for this interview, and you said you wish you knew a lot of things when you just started the company. You want to share with us some of your past mistakes or successes, and we definitely want to hear that too. Of just I think you've been with Fluiform for like 2-3 years now, so there must be a lot of lessons throughout.
Sure. Yeah. You know, if you want a list of mistakes, the question is, how long do you have, right? We've made most of them. And I think we're probably still making some right now that we're going to learn about, and we're going to continue to try to correct and get better. When I think about, you know, what I wish I could know better, or what I've learned and what I wish I could go back and do better. You know, I really think about a couple of areas. Number one, there is, you know, signal in the market that I wish we had asked earlier. There's questions that we asked the market that we didn't ask 2 years ago that if we had, we would have made different decisions sooner. I really do believe that the quality of the business outcome is directly correlated to the quality of the questions that you ask, right? So you've got to be out talking to the market. You've got to be out talking to the people who can be using your products, and you've got to understand where their pain points are. We did that, but I always feel like we could do that faster. We could do that smarter. I also think that our ability to sort of pick these programs that we're in the process of developing, working on right now, it took us a little bit longer to sort of land on what we wanted to work on and why. And I think in part that was because our platform can do so many things. So we sort of delayed the let's pick a program and just work on it longer than we should have, at the expense of let's talk to everybody and figure out what else they might need. And I do think, you know, going back earlier, I would go back and just put a line in the sand and start working on something. And if we needed to change, then we'd change. I think that's probably the single biggest thing. I would say, you know, on the plus side, the one thing that I can say that I would absolutely do again exactly the same way with no changes is, you know, when we set out to build our seed round, we set out to find a group of investors who not just, you know, had money and were willing to write a check, but were actually intrigued by what we were doing and saw us as a group that was worth kind of going on a journey with. Mm-hmm. And we've been incredibly fortunate that our investors have been behind us, have had our backs, have been very supportive, have been working with us. They've rolled up their sleeves and they've worked with us a lot. And I know that not every startup can say that. We're incredibly fortunate to be able to say that. And I'm, you know, to this day, incredibly appreciative of everybody who took a chance on writing a check to support what we're doing.
So any advice for a budding entrepreneur in this space?
I would say, you know, the only universal advice that I can give is dream big. Don't let fear get in your way, and, you know, be relentless. You know, go down and go out and knock down every door until you find folks who are kind of part of your tribe, right? Your energy, your vision will attract your tribe. Go out there and put that vision out in front of as many people as you can, and that energy will attract the right tribe.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, for sure, Mike, but you've done it.
So have you, right? I mean, that's what you've been building with 3D Heels for as long as, I mean, we've been talking for several years now. And I think that's very much what you've been doing. And it's part of what I admire about you and how you built this organization. So I think that's a universal.
Well, I think for sure the 3D Heels Pass allowed me to empathize with you guys, the pain that you have to go through to get the word out, to convince people about your ideas and, you know, not give up, because there are definitely painful moments no matter what business you're in. Well, let me see. There are some questions talking about, they want to know. Adam Feinberg is the scientist behind the technology, the lab that's behind it. There's one question. Anyone else has any questions, please ask right now. Let's see. So actually, I'm happy to post the links of any publications that you want to share, along with the post that I'm going to write with this interview. Let's see. Okay, I think we don't have any questions today. Thank you, Mike, for this very wonderful interview. I'm hoping to do it again. And maybe when you can finally reveal to us what exact application you're working on.
That would be great, Jenny. I'd love to do it. It's my first time on Instagram Live.
Yes.
It's been a fun experience. Thanks for setting
up. Well, you know, this is actually Instagram Room. So this is live, yes, but now we can actually invite up to 3 guests. So maybe in the future we can even have Adam on this as well.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Well, have a great day. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, Mike.
That's it for this episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @3D Heels, and check out the links in the show notes. See you next time.